sky's so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
Yeah.
Hey. It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. We'll be taking your calls and your text questions in just a moment. You can call us at 801-575-8255 or text us at 57500. Good morning, Ton.
Good morning.
Sun's out, and it's going to be stormy most of the weekend.
Yeah, the weather forecast has changed about every 6 hours the last couple of days, and it went from 80% chance of rain today and tomorrow to clear and to now 40 or 50, 60% chance every day for the next 4 or 5 days.
Kind of puts a little bit of a stall to any gardening plants.
It does. It's cooling down a little bit up into the upper 40s to lower 50s, which we need. I was out yesterday, the day before, and areas have apricots blooming already, pluots blooming, forsythias out, and it's a week to 10 days ahead of where we should be, and it just, what it does is increases our chances of frost through April, and so we do need to slow down a little bit on the weather, so hopefully this will get us back to not normal, but just kind of putting the reins on things a little bit.
Slow down, weather.
Slow down.
Yeah, well, it's also prime allergy season. I'm already sniffling and sneezing,
yeah, itchy
and my eyes are burning.
Ooh. Yeah, it's on.
Okay, I'm not going to complain about that because it's worth all of the beautiful blooms that we get as a result.
It is.
This morning, the plant of the week is the rock cress, which is just a really beautiful, low spring blooming perennial. And it comes in a couple of different colors, the white and the purple. And why do you like the rock cress?
Well, they're pretty spring blooming plants. And they're, again, you know, when you plant only spring blooming perennials, your yard's beautiful for 6 weeks and then you have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But they are worth mixing in because they're adapted to alkaline soil, which we have, and they're native to Europe in the Mediterranean area, but at higher elevations. And so they are ones that are just adapted to our relatively dry climate, although they will need supplemental irrigation.
They do not like the heat, though.
They don't.
So where is the best place to plant these, you know, to really enjoy them all season?
Yeah,
long?
If you read the plant catalogs, they usually say full sun. And if you live in areas where it doesn't get above, you know, 90, 93, 94, that probably works. And so they're hardy enough, at least some of the varieties, that they would survive Bear Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And in those areas, I would plant them in full sun. But on the Wasatch Front, because our temperatures have been increasing during the summer, well, in the winter too, but I would actually put them maybe on the east side of my house. But definitely not where they're getting a lot of reflected heat.
Right. They seem to do better with a little bit of partial shade.
6 hours of sun a day is sufficient for
right.
them.
Right. And then these, you have to be careful where you plant them too, because they'll kind of thin out during the summer and look kind of scraggly. Where if they're in a cooler area, they stay in their nice green mound.
They do. And there's a trick to preventing them from doing that. If you, as soon as they're done blooming, especially if they're newer plants, you tip prune them just 3 or 4 inches, and it causes a lot of side growth and limits their scraggliness.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you tip prune them after they're done blooming, that will help.
So how much do you do?
3 or 4 inches off the tips of the, where the, we'd call it the terminal bud or apical bud, but you follow the little branches out or the runners, and at the tips of those, just cut 3 or 4 inches off. Or if they're getting too big, cut a little more off and let them send out a lot of side branches, so to speak, from those points.
Okay, well, that's the first time I've heard that, so I'm glad that I asked this question about how
yes.
they get scraggly.
And so there is a second variety of rock cress, and one of the names is false rock cress.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a pretender, but it's also really pretty. I mean, we're more familiar with the purple rock cresses, but there are varieties of rock cress that are white and pink and coming into red. If you look up them online, you can tell that somebody's used Photoshop maybe to enhance the red color.
That's not helpful. Let me put it that way.
And so the one that we usually see, if you look at the Latin name, is Arabis. Mm-hmm. And the other one is Abricia. Sometimes people call it Abrietta. But they look very similar. It's just that depending on which ones, you can find white, you can find pink, you can find almost red. Then you can go into the purples and almost blues to where you're getting into violet colors. And so people will use these interchangeably with the creeping phlox, to where the creeping phlox has a lot, some similar colors in the pinks and whites and purples, but they are a little bit taller. And it's not that I prefer them, but they give you a different texture in your spring garden.
The rock cress, you mean?
Yes, the rock cress.
Yeah. I kind of like how they have kind of a soft kind of leaf to them.
They do. And the leaves are evergreen. And as you mentioned, during hot summers, if they're in full blast sun on south exposures, they can look a little bit tired and ratty by July and August. But if you plant them in that afternoon shade to where they're still getting 6 hours, but out of the hottest part of the day, I think they look better over time than the creeping phlox do, because those can also get a little bit tired and kind of beat up looking by the end of the season.
Yeah, these two perennials are so beautiful in the spring. And when you go into your garden center, be aware of the fact that you need to mix them in with other perennials, because the first year, like you said, that we planted things in our yard, I went in the spring and I bought lots of phlox and lots of rock cress. And then that's all I had for the season, and had to plant tons of annuals to have any color whatsoever.
As my dad would say, you want to prevent your yard from becoming a one-trick pony.
I absolutely did that the first
and
year.
So,
live and learn, right?
Yeah. So both of these are actually in the cabbage family, the brassicas. And we are familiar with the cabbage and the broccoli and the Brussels sprouts and all them. These are close relatives, but a lot of our spring blooming flowers are actually part of that same family. And the way they survive and their, I guess, MO is to come out in the spring, bloom soon, and then go partially dormant later in the season and do it again so that they can get a jump on soil nutrients and sunlight and things before all the trees leaf out. And so they intentionally and genetically bloom early as part of their life strategy.
So are they also edible?
Not the Abricias, but the Arabis forms. So Arabis caucasic?
So there are some.
Yes, Caucasian. They're from the Caucasus Mountains, and so they're called Caucasian rock cress. That particular kind is a salad herb, and they are edible.
Okay. Because you know a lot of people now like to really change up their foods and their salads and add in kind of flowers.
Yes, and
some
so
roses that are edible.
I would be careful and make sure that you have Arabis and not Abricia, because Abricia, there's no information on if it's edible or not, but the Arabis is edible and you can use it in salads.
It was my curiosity question.
Yeah.
Not that I think a lot of people would even do that. Anything that affects these insects or diseases?
Not really. There's a few things out there. You might actually get some cabbage looper on them in the spring. Once in a while, they are susceptible to some fungal diseases if they're overhead watered too much and water sits on them. If they're overwatered, they can get some root rots in them. But generally, I think the biggest thing that gets them is actually the heat during the summer. They are relatively water wise.
Okay.
So especially if you put them in afternoon shade and then get them established after a year or two, they'll survive just fine being watered deeply once a week.
Anything else you wanted to add about that?
Oh, they're really pretty, and it's just the time of year to talk about them because they're in bloom, and they should be available now. If not, they'll be available within the next few
weeks
from local retailers. So,
all right. And you can find out more about the rock cress, which is the plant of the week, on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We're going to take a break. Come back with your calls and questions. The number to call, 801-575-8255. Text us, 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You're going to text us your questions at 57500. Let's see. First text of the morning, Ton, is a white top question. What's the best way to manage white top? Which herbicides work best? Is it blooming this time of year?
It's growing, but not blooming yet, mm-hmm. but it's quickly spreading. And this is one that I really need more information. But the best thing that they can spray on it is actually Roundup or a glyphosate product, because Roundup does a really great job of knocking it out at like 100%. If it's in the lawn, then they can use a lawn weed killer containing 2,4-D. 2,4-D is registered to take it out. But if it's in flower beds and things, they need to be careful, and they will have to take precautions to protect their desirable plants if they're leafing out, especially, and they do not use a lawn weed killer in those flower beds. And so they would use a glyphosate product because it's less likely to drift. So, but white top is one that it's been around for a long time, but over the last 10 years, it has spread like wildfire in areas of the West Desert, in areas where there's new construction, areas that have salty soil or certain heavy metals. It is tolerant of a lot of different soil conditions, and it has a root system that it spreads like wildfire. One new plant can produce dozens of little baby plants in one summer, and they seed out and produce hundreds of seeds per plant. And so they're not a one to be fooled with. If you find a few of them, get rid of them, because within a year to 2 years, they'll be everywhere. Fortunately, there are some herbicides that will take them out, but it's if you travel through Eureka, Southern Utah County, up through Box Elder County, there are many areas that has become really problematic. And just to show how pervasive and bad the weed is, for as much as you, it'll form almost like a 18-inch to 2-foot ground cover above ground. 70% of its biomass is underground.
Wow.
So it's just a really bad weed. So get
rid
of it.
But it's so pretty. I've got out in the desert. It's really lovely.
It is, but
it's cauliflower. I mean, I don't know what it
looks
like.
It does. It is one that there was a situation last year to where there's an area that it has a lot of oriental poppies blooming in the spring. And so it's become Instagram famous. And this white top has been moving in. And they've got the oriental poppies and the white top blooming at the same time. Mm-hmm. But the white top was taking over the whole area and slowly eliminating the poppies. And so the thing that it is pretty, when several years ago I was digging it and getting it out of my yard, my daughter came out and was just in tears because I was ruining her pretty flowers.
When
she was 6 or 7 years old.
That's why it's important to know what you have in your
yard,
right? Yes,
but it is one that we talked about, that strategy of the rock cresses to come out and bloom early. And then they'll go semi-dormant through the summer so that they can beat all the other plants to the soil moisture and the soil resources and grow faster. Well, white top is a very naughty cousin to the rock cresses. It's in the same family. And because it spreads by underground rhizomes so quickly, it is one that we really don't want. But it uses that same strategy of using available soil moisture and soil resources, nutrients, to outcompete the native plants that will come out later. And because it's there, and not only is it shading the ground, but it is depleting the soil of moisture and nutrients, our native plants can't compete with it. And that is why it is such just a bad plant, and that if you get it in your yard or on your property, it should be controlled.
All right. Connie is on the line in Cottonwood Heights. Good morning, Connie. What was your question this morning?
Well, my question is, I'm going to take you back to the creeping phlox again.
Sure.
Because I've had creeping phlox in my front flower bed for about 4 years, and it has looked really nice. But last year, it just started looking scraggly and woody and ugly. And I tried cutting it back, and now it just looks more woody. Do I take part of it out? Do I take it all out, start over? What do I do? And it is north facing.
If this spring it doesn't look any better, I would dig it up and just replant. It does have a usable life. 4, 5, 6 years down the road, it does get a little bit scraggly and things, and so it never hurts to refresh. And then, you know, you might try some other things. You know, a lot of our spring blooming perennials don't last longer than the 5 or 6 years before they start looking tired and, you know, just getting to a point that they maybe need to be swapped out. But you could maybe try some other spring blooming perennials and mix it up a bit, just, you know, depending on what's available.
Okay. So I'm kind of looking for something that's a little ground covering a little bit without it multiplying and replenishing and taking over the earth all on its own. So would it be the rock cress, or is that going to do the same thing?
They're very similar in use. And
okay,
it's just that the rock cresses have a lot of the same general colors, but different shades, darker purple, you know, pinks and different things. And like we've talked about earlier, when you plant them, when they're done blooming, you give them a light haircut and plant them, okay, in areas where they're not going to get a lot of hot sun. So east side of your home, away from reflected heat, and they'll do better. But even rock cress over 5 or 6 years may start to look a little bit tired.
So what if she divided a portion of that and planted a small portion somewhere else? Like,
that's something I would definitely try. So this spring, if you do have healthy portions, you know, then you've got these big clumps. Maybe you dig them up and
after
pull out.
Blooming.
Yeah, after they're done blooming. Well,
yeah.
No?
Okay.
Well, that might kill them. That might kill them, right?
It might kill them. So you'd need to actually do this in the fall. And so you dig them up, take the healthy portions, and split them to 3 or 4 inch, maybe 5 inch wide sections. 4 inches is probably sufficient. And put them in new homes and see if they come out in the spring and do their thing for you.
You
if
can
not,
tell I don't like giving up on my plants.
Yeah. So it just depends.
I was going to say, I'm just not in love with them that much. I'm, you know, not that attached to it. If I pull it out, throw it away, I'm okay with that.
All right.
So
opportunity to plant something new.
Okay.
All right.
So try the rock cress, but you said maybe intermingle it with other stuff.
You can. I mean, if you only need low growing things, you're a little bit limited on spring bloomers.
Yeah.
But there are some other spring blooming plants. I mean, like the dronicums, the leopard's bane, has yellow spring daisies that might look really pretty mixed in with the purples and pinks. So that would be one you could look at. In more shady areas, you might even look at Linton Rose. That's an early spring bloomer that's out right now, too. So there are some other things you could mix in.
Okay. What did you call the other one? Dragon's mane?
Leopard's bane. B-A-N-E.
Oh, leopard's bane.
Leopard's bane and Linton Rose or some.
Bane.
It's also called,
got
yeah.
It.
It's sometimes the Linton Rose is also called hellebore.
All right, Connie.
Okay.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255 or text us 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning, taking your calls at 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open, and you can text us your questions at 57500. I don't think a lot of people are very excited about getting out in their yards today, Ton. It looks a bit gloomy out there. Some rain is impending, and that wind, oh my goodness.
It is also just, I want to be in bed. You know,
that time change really did you in, right?
It did. I know you mentioned that it's just been tough to readjust. It's only an hour, but I don't know. It's just a busy time of year, too. But the weather is kind of putting a damper on things. And I was planning on working my yard. I'm hoping I have the opportunity to. But
I was planning on planting trees. I'm not sure I want to dig some holes with rain coming.
Unsettled weather, it makes it a little interesting to try to get things done.
Certainly does. Our next listener would like to know, they say they bought what they assume is a hardy hibiscus. The tag says it's a rose mallow hibiscus hybrid. They want to know, how do they prune it and when?
You would just cut it back now because it's a perennial that dies back in the fall. Cut it within a couple inches of the ground, and you might even think it's dead, but it will, in sometime between late April and mid-May, wake up, and when it does, it grows 2 or 3 inches a day. And so they are very fast growers when they do wake up, and then they'll generally start blooming anywhere from early to late July, depending on the temperatures. But if it's a hybrid rose mallow, that's rose mallow is just another name for hardy hibiscus.
Okay. Next listener would like to know, when do they seed the sweet meat squash?
You would seed that just 2 or 3 weeks before you would plant it outside, and you want to put it in containers that are deep, because the squash are deeply rooted, and they're actually, that whole family is native to areas that are at least a little bit arid, and so they like to reach into the soil. So don't put them in standard trays, but put them in something that's at least 3 to 4 inches tall. You know, even sometimes the red, not Dixie cups, the red plastic drinking cups, mm-hmm. or you can use a number of things, but they are deeply rooted. I like to find, if I can, biodegradable containers that are deeper and then seed those out a couple of weeks, you know, 2 to 3 weeks ahead of time. And I'll just put the whole container in my garden, slit the sides so it can root through the sides, and they seem to be happy.
Yeah. You don't want to start now, though, because it'll get too big and scraggly.
You'll have
a two or three foot plant
that you won't be able to transplant.
Okay. 2 to 3 weeks before you want to put
Yeah. Squash are very short term because they're hard to transplant, or harder than other plants. And so when you do that, you need to have a deeper container. If you're pulling them out of the cells, you need to treat them very gently so you don't mess up the roots.
Next person would like to know, how early can they plant the Blue Lake 27? This is very specific. Blue Lake 274 bush green beans. Start with that one.
Not until danger of frost is gone. Sometime early to mid-May is just fine.
We're just excited. That's all.
Yeah, if they want legumes, plant peas. It's fine to plant them now.
And how early do they plant the early bird zinnias?
It depends.
Assuming they want to put seeds outside, maybe that's not a great assumption.
Sometime late April, and then just let them germinate. But if they're doing them inside, I would get them started within the next week or two.
Next person would like to know how to grow sweet potatoes in a container.
You need a huge container. So sweet potatoes are pretty aggressive. If you're familiar with sweet potato vine, it's the same species, but the vine will produce the tubers, but they don't taste that great. It's the cultivated varieties that we want, and you would want a container with a volume of at least 20 gallons.
Wow.
So it's something that I don't know how practical it is. You can do it, but you need
a
good
volume.
You almost
need a farm.
You do.
To plant sweet potatoes. Sweet potatoes, right?
Yeah. The potatoes will get 3x3. The tops will. Sweet potatoes creep along the ground, and you can let them intermix. And you plant them. I'm trying to remember if it's 18 inches or 2 foot spacing.
Mm-hmm.
But they do occupy, you know, quite a big space, at least 3 feet wide. So you might get away with a slightly smaller container, but they do need a lot. The root volume and the size of the plant makes it, they're not really too friendly for gardening in small spaces.
They were also wondering about, can you plant the ones that are sold in the grocery stores?
They, I suspect, are oftentimes treated with a plant hormone that prevents them from rooting. Sometimes they will. I mean, all I could say is they could try it. There are some videos on YouTube on using sweet potato tubers to create new slips.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can watch those videos. And I think you could have success. I just ordered a bunch of sweet potato slips from Johnny's for some work I'm doing with USU. And I like a variety called Mayhan that only Johnny sells. I'm not promoting Johnny's over others, but I've had more success with the Mayhan because it seems to produce the grocery store size sweet potatoes. Because mm-hmm. a lot of other varieties I've tried produce a great big 1 pound to 2 pound huge sweet potato, and you only get one per plant. And that's a little more common in clay soils, but Mayhan seems to be more resistant to doing that.
So explain for me, I bought some seeds from Park Seed a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about the mini me cucumbers. They're like what you see in Costco. They're like the cocktail cucumbers because I wanted to grow these smaller ones because I love them. I love to eat them. I mean, without even peeling them, they're delicious. But explain to me why it was $11 for 10 seeds.
They're probably hybrid.
They are definitely hybrid.
They may be the exclusive dealer of them, and where they have a patented variety that's their own. And sometimes producing these hybrids is very expensive because they have to have somebody sitting there with, in essence, a little mini paintbrush going to a female flower of one cucumber to the male flower to female, and hand pollinating every flower.
And okay, so, I'm understanding better now.
So you can run into that. There are seeds that I've seen that you can pay 50 cents a seed for some of these hybrids. Petunias are, because the easy to grow ones, or at least easy to germinate, and they need to be started in January, are coated because the petunia seeds are like dust. And so that can cause them to be more expensive. Now, you wouldn't need to coat a cucumber seed, but usually it's because it's exclusive, it's new, and they may have had to hand pollinate every flower.
Do I need to plant all the seeds this year? Can I save half of them?
You could save half of them. And what I would do is just put them in a mason jar or as, you know, even a smaller jar, or even one of the old glass baby food jars would work if you can even still find those. I think they're mostly plastic now. But you want something that seals, and you can just put them in a cool room or refrigerate them or even freeze them and then bring them out in the spring.
Could I take my own seeds from those cucumbers?
No. Well, you could in theory, but you would need to probably hand pollinate them.
Oh my.
And then protect the flowers from other pollinators.
That's never happening.
And then you would need to let the cucumbers grow to maturity. So they're going to get bigger, going to turn yellow. And when they turn, you know, yellow, harvest the seeds. And so it's possible, but do you want to?
No. But at least you explained to me why the seeds are a dollar a piece. Because it was like, what in the world? That is so expensive. If I didn't love them, I would never have done
that. Newer specialty things that are expensive. I'm surprised that you can even find the seed, honestly.
Well,
because
may not be able to this week. It was a couple of weeks ago. So
yeah, just because a lot of these, you know, we get a lot of questions about cotton candy grapes, and there's another variety out that's a super sweet, mildly, you know, really nice flavored grape. I can't remember the name of it, but a lot of times these plants have patents that last, I think, for 17 years before they become available to the public.
The other thing I thought was really interesting, like I was doing research on, I went right to the Park Seed site, but actually they were cheaper on Amazon.
Well, a lot of seed distributors have Amazon stores.
Oh.
And I'll get on Amazon and I ordered, peanuts, and I've got a project going on with Dean Miner, which we can talk about another time, but I ordered peanuts and then some other specialty tomato seeds. And when the receipts came in, they came in an Amazon package with a Park Seed receipt inside of it. And so you found them actually less expensive on Amazon than on Park Seed's website.
Mm-hmm. I did. I'm like, okay, I'm going that way. Free shipping. You've got it.
Yeah. There's a tomato I ordered called, is it Sweet Baby Jane, Sweet Baby Girl? It's a red tomato and it's really, really sweet. And the only place I could find it was Amazon. And it's, again, one of those situations you get 10 seeds for like $5. But
shopping around is always a good idea.
It is. But I want to grow some of these out because they're one of the better cherry tomatoes I've ever had.
All right. We're going to take a break. Come back with your calls. We do have a couple of callers now on the line. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Taking your calls, 801-575-8255, or you can text at 57500. Next listener, Ton, would like to know, can they still cut back their butterfly bush? It's already leafing out.
They can. I wish I would have done it a couple of weeks ago, but just get it done.
Okay. Next listener wants to know, can you start corn on the cob inside and then move it out in May?
Not a great idea. Corn is so easy to germinate. And it actually doesn't transplant super well. It will, but I would just plant it from seed outside. They can plant it as early as late April. We're supposed to be a little warmer this spring than normal. So, but it's just one of those things that it germinates fairly readily already. And so I just don't find it worth the resources. Yeah.
All right. Mark is on the line in Kaysville. Good morning, Mark. What was your question?
Morning. I've got a pixie peach and an early Alberta peach, and I'm wondering if there's any differences in how I should prune them, being that the pixie stays so much smaller and the leaves are so much denser.
Well, we're going to be talking pruning next hour on peaches, but you're going to use the same form, but the pixie, you know, is just smaller to where you're using an open center. And so just make sure that, you know, you can, on the early Alberta, you can take up to 50% of the wood out. The pixie is so small that you can still prune it fairly heavily, but just be careful that you don't prune it back to nubs.
Okay. And then are almonds the same way, where you can prune them that hard since they're so closely related?
Yes, you can. You can prune almonds fairly hard like you would a peach.
Okay, cool. And then I did have another question on, it's on water gardening, so that may not be your specialty, but I've heard that you can put irises actually underwater in a bog, certain kinds of irises, like a flag iris. If I were to buy one planted in a pot with dirt, could I move that to the bog, or does it have to be from a plant that was already in a bog?
I think you could probably start one and do it, but who I would talk to is Doug over at J&J. He's their pond person. Go in on, I'm not sure when his day off is, but go in on a weekday, not a Saturday, and talk to him about pond plants, because I don't know anybody who is more knowledgeable than him about what to do with ponds. And so I actually think, and I'm not saying you need to buy them there, but J&J in the past has carried the bog iris as a as a pond plant, but Doug would know exactly what to do.
Great. Thank you so much for your help.
Mark, thank you so much for your call. In about 10 minutes, we will be talking about how to prune peach trees in depth. So if you want to stay listening for that, we'll have that for you as well. Next listener, Ton, wants to know, any recommendations for a ground cover or shrub that would do well between two flowering crab apples?
Ground cover or shrub between two flowering crab apples. I wish we had the distances, and I hate to answer such things because there's just kind of nebulous.
Okay.
Because we need more information, so they might have to be brave and call in.
All right. We're going to take a break, come back with the top of the hour news. When we do come back, as we mentioned this morning, we will be talking about pruning. Is it mainly peach trees?
Mainly
peach trees. Yep. And then in the 10 o'clock hour, we are going to be talking about planting trees in general. So if you're thinking about planting trees, you want to stay tuned for that. About 10:07, we'll be talking about that. Thank you for listening to the KSL Greenhouse. When we come back, we'll be taking your calls and your questions. The plant of the week this morning was the rockcress, and you can find out more about that on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page.